From WXXI News, this is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Well, our connection for this hour goes back just a couple weeks to March 31st, New York State passing a kind of campaign financing reform trial balloon. It was hardly a sweeping measure that Governor Andrew Cuomo said he was looking for. And in fact, this measure was a small step. It would include only one statewide race this year, the race for comptroller, and it would use public financing as a kind of trial run in that case. But that system would not remove private contributions, not hardly, and the current comptroller, Thomas DiNapoli, says it's a disaster. He will not participate, and so there will be no real public campaign financing this year. We want to hear from you as we take a look at what public financing really means for political campaigns. Can you get money out of politics? Is that a good goal to have? Should your tax dollars be involved? We've got some folks from all sides of this debate. Brian Sampson's the executive director of Unshackle Upstate. He's in studio. Brian, nice to see you.
Always good to see you, Evan.
And Susan Lerner is the executive director of Common Cause NY, and she's on the phone. Susan, nice to talk to you this afternoon. Are you there, Susan? If you're there. Oh, we're pulling her back into the conversation. Brian, for now, it's just you and me.
Sure.
We'll have Susan in just a moment. What happened on March 31st, April 1st, when they passed the budget, not a whole lot changed for the state, and I know Unshackle Upstate is happy to see no sweeping changes.
Yeah, we're very pleased that they didn't move forward with a 6-to-1 matching grants program like they have in New York City, a program that we don't think has worked and hasn't gotten the end result that people want. And I think on the flip side, there were some positive things in the budget as well, changing reporting requirements, both from a lobbying side, from a super PAC side, putting an enforcement officer at the Board of Elections. So I think some things move forward in the right direction. We don't have a public matching system, which is great, and we're going to have to continue to look at this issue.
All right, we're going to be looking at what New York City is doing, their public matching system, what New York State has been looking at. And if you want to join the conversation, 263-WXXI, 263-9994. Susan Lerner is on the line. She's the executive director of Common Cause NY. Susan, good afternoon, and thanks for taking the time.
My pleasure. Sorry to join you a little late.
Oh,
no
worries.
I didn't get to hear everything Brian had to say, but I'm sure I'll have a chance to catch up.
I'm sure you will. And Brian was just addressing the fact that this year we're not really seeing much reform, Susan. In fact, Thomas DiNapoli has already said he thinks that this trial balloon that they floated is kind of a disaster. He's not going to participate. He thinks it was potentially designed for public campaign financing to fail. What do you think about what has been proposed and what was ultimately passed, even this sort of vague trial balloon?
Well, it's not really a vague trial balloon. It's a bust. And I think that the comptroller was right to turn it down. It's not really a pilot project of any kind. It's not a fully featured public financing system that would allow people to see how it would work statewide. It is set up after the horses left the barn as far as fundraising is concerned, and it just didn't make any sense. It was very disappointing to see that this is what ended up being the result of a broad-based statewide campaign to try and really make a difference in Albany and to try and limit the very corrosive impact of political money in our culture of entitlement and corruption in Albany.
All right, taking a look at what did pass, and again, if the incumbent comptroller is not going to participate, it does indeed look like a bust, but it would emphasize small donor donations, providing 6-to-1 matches for individual gifts of up to $175, would require candidates to generate at least $200,000 in donations that qualify for the match from at least 2,000 donations of $10 to $75 from residents of this state, and it would cap individual donations at $6,000.
And that's the part that we like, in the sense that that is a fair election system that we've been advocating for, that takes the advantages that we've developed here in New York City and brings them up to the state level. And the real focus of a matching fund public financing program is to change the campaign culture, to refocus the candidates and the public on small dollar contributions. It's an incentive system to bring more private participation into our election system by using public money as an incentive. And what we've seen in New York is that that works incredibly well. It really increases the number of individual contributors. It increases the proportion of small dollar contributions that candidates rely on. and it helps to de-emphasize large dollar special interest contributions.
The existing state campaign finance limits are among our nation's highest. They allow individual donations for up to $60,800 for statewide races. So you'd be reducing that by about 90%. I do want to start this kind of conversation. We've got a lot of ground to cover here with what's going on in New York City, because I think that's an interesting way to look at things. Last week, we had the Assembly Majority Leader Joe Morelli in studio with us, and I want to listen to what Joe Morelli had to say when it comes to campaign finance reform. He talked about what he thinks are the biggest problems when it comes to the way we finance campaigns and what he would like to see change. He also referenced what's going on in New York City. This is Joe Morelli talking about this issue.
The biggest challenge in my mind and the biggest thing we have to get a handle of is both a national issue and a state issue is the exponential growth in independent expenditures that are largely without disclosure, without very many rules. So essentially a group comes in, raises money, spends money, says that they're not coordinated in any way with a candidate, and can spend limitless amounts of money. I mean, I saw what happened to Ted O'Brien, who's a friend, 2 years ago when he was running for election. Hundreds of thousands of dollars, may have been more than that, spent by a post office box out of Virginia. Despite subpoenas, no one ever knows where the money came from. I think that, in my mind, is the biggest challenge to having elections where there's real disclosure and where the public is informed. So, you know, I know there's a lot of focus on public financing and campaigns. I've seen people who are now under indictment in the state legislature because they try to take advantage of the public financing system in New York City. I'm not sure that's the answer. I mean, we have voted for it in the legislature. We started with this experiment this year in the controller's race, and you're right that the sitting controller announced the other day that he wasn't going to participate in it because there are some flaws in his view in the way the law was designed. But I think we have to get after disclosure. I think Citizens United, as well as the McCutcheon case last week, have done a great deal of damage to keeping powerful interests out of politics. I mean, they're always going to be there to some extent. They have a right because of the First Amendment. But I think to not have disclosure, not have limits, and to certainly allow these independent expenditures where the public has no idea where the money's coming is the gravest danger to our democracy.
All right, so that is Joe Morelli, the leader of the Democrats in the Assembly, the majority leader, I should say. And that's a Democrat, Susan. This is somebody saying that he's looking at what's happening in New York City and saying he's got some concern about that. He's got colleagues under indictment that the rules are easily flouted there. What do you say to that?
Well, what's interesting is that the people who are under indictment are Albany folks trying to misuse the city system, and they got caught right away because the city system actually has tremendous safeguards that we don't see up in Albany and a very strong enforcement agency, the New York City Campaign Finance Board, which actually, when you talk to people who are in the state legislature right now who ran for a city council in New York, they complained about how tough the campaign finance board was and how, you know, they had to be super careful and everything was double checked and what a burden it was to actually have to follow the law. We don't believe it's a burden to follow the law. We believe that having a tough cop on the beat actually protects the system. It's a well-policed system, and the few people who've been caught have been caught by the campaign finance board. They've been punished, and to the extent that the very few people that misused the city system misused it, they had to disgorge the public money. The public has gotten millions of dollars back in unused funds, and if anything is improperly spent, then the candidate or then the elected official has to reimburse the public. We don't see any of those kind of guidelines in Albany at all. So to say that people got caught is simply saying they were human, but we had a system in place that actually minimizes the opportunities for wrongdoing. Unlike Albany, where we've had, 30-plus legislators who are indicted or let off in handcuffs or in jail just in the past couple of years.
All right, let me jump in and give Brian Sampson, the executive director of Unshackle Upstate, a chance to respond there. Go ahead, Brian.
Yeah, you know, the New York City system is gamed, and it's gamed on an annual basis. And, you know, you just have to look at the last elections. You had former New York City Comptroller John Liu. Two of his staff members were indicted for creating straw man donors to try to manipulate the 6-to-1 matching system.
Brian, explain for our listeners your concern about how the straw man would be set up and how we potentially have seen it set up.
So basically, they get donations that are from individuals and they assign a name to it that allows them to then draw down $6 for every $1 that that straw donor would contribute. So two of his staff members indicted for that. Willie Rapfogel, well-known individual down in New York City. He runs a not-for-profit. He got his insurance company to make donations to city council members who then turned around and gave Willie's organization grants.
So you see a system that's ripe for corruption. Susan says, hey, if people are corrupt, they're getting busted. Isn't that the point, that at least we know who they are? We can catch them?
You know how we found the straw man donors? The campaign finance board goes through every single card and said, hey, these signatures are identical. Something's going on here. And as a consequence, John Liu, when he ran for another office, didn't get any public money at all, which outraged him, and now he's suing about that.
All right, hold on. Let's let Brian.
No system is perfect, and this is a system which catches people and discourages wrong.
Go ahead, Brian.
But they wouldn't have tried to take advantage of the system if the 6-to-1 public matching system wasn't in place. You also have to consider you have two other individuals that tried to manipulate, and actually didn't manipulate the system, but had an opportunity to run for office. You had Vito Lopez, a disgraced assembly member who was accused of sexually harassing staff, resigned from the New York State Assembly, ran for New York City Council, got $90,000 in taxpayer money. Anthony Weiner, former disgraced congressman, got over $1 million in taxpayer money to run for the mayor of New York City, got less than 4% of the vote. That is not a good use of taxpayer money when, in fact, we have such significant issues in the state of New York.
All right, now, we're going to get to the calls in just a second because we've got phone calls coming in. And if you want to join the conversation, 263-WXXI, 263-9994. Unshackle Upstate has put out a white paper that sort of lays out their case on why they don't favor this. And it's a very clear read. But, Brian, there's one point I want to touch on here, and then I'll let Susan jump in. On Anthony Weiner, here's an example of somebody who had more than $1 million built up, didn't have to run for mayor, was pretty clearly not going to win.
Correct.
The implication when you read the Unshackle paper against this is he had an incentive to go ahead and run anyway, because otherwise he's got to give the money back. And
he's
just going to go ahead and spend the money because it's there, and instead of giving it back to the taxpayers. But that sort of ignores the fact that Anthony Weiner has the biggest ego of anyone who's ever lived. I mean, he might have actually thought he could win here.
He did.
And so how do we know he just decided, well, I'm not going to win, but I've got the money sitting there, so I'm just going to go spend it? You're implying that most politicians would spend it just because it's there.
And I think that that is very much the case. Does Anthony Weiner run for the mayor of New York City if he doesn't have over $1 million in taxpayer money? I don't even think he has a big enough ego to think that he can win and raise that money. Who's going to donate to a disgraced former congressman other than if you have a public matching system, which is what we have? And it's important for people to understand, Evan, also, New York City's model started off as a 1-to-1 matching grants program. It then moved to a 4-to-1. It's currently at a 6-to-1. And there are some people calling for a 10-to-1 matching system. Where does this stop? You know, how long till we realize you can't get corruption out of politics because there's always a human element there?
Susan, when we look at the matching system, various estimates for New York State, you know, we can kind of game it out to be about every 4 years what the cost would be. $40 to $60 million annually is kind of an initial estimate of what it would cost the state. Where are we going to take that money from to get that money for public campaigns?
Well, there are a lot of different places where you can take the money. Some states take it from the general fund. And remember, New York isn't the only place that's having this conversation or that has a public financing system.
That's certainly right.
Our neighbors next door at Connecticut have a very successful public funding system that both Democrats and Republicans run under, and they fund it entirely from a small portion of funds that are abandoned to the state, which is the funding source which the legislature picked up for the abbreviated comptroller system that was put up in the budget. We've also suggested that you could have a surcharge on civil and criminal penalties. There are monies that are collected for tax fraud or for securities fraud violations, which would be available right now. Those monies sit in a fund in the AG's office. So there are various places where you can have what is called a dedicated funding source that isn't classic taxpayer money, but often comes from wrongdoers or people who, have the lost property, which is, in essence, found money.
All right, let's get to the phones in a second. I know Brian wanted. Mm-hmm. Did you want to hit that one time?
But if those dollars were going to go to the state's general fund anyway, they're still taxpayer dollars, because once they're removed from the general fund and you have a public matching system in place, you are going to have to find a way to subsidize it. And you're going to subsidize it by going after taxpayers.
Well, the thing is, none of those monies are in the public fund right now. And the stream is
But maybe they should be, Susan.
Stream. There, it's a variable stream. Which goes up and which goes down. So you simply budget it at its lower level, and the public has the benefit of a campaign culture which is focused on voters and not on special interest
But then
donors.
What happens?
That is a basic good.
But then what happens when a number of people enter into the race and there is not enough money in the public fund to support all those races?
Well, one of the things that's really very useful about abandoned property is that, sadly, people lose track of things, don't collect the money that's owing to them, and the amount of abandoned funds is so many hundreds to thousands of multiples larger than the amount that's needed that it's really not a concern.
All right, let's get to the phones. Keith in Pittsford, thanks for calling Connections. Go ahead, Keith.
I've been a very good show. I got a couple questions. One, I'm going to answer Brian's question. Who's going to donate money to disgraced politicians? I was wondering if he's ever heard of David Vitter, for one. Personally, I would like to see publicly funded campaigns so each politician gets the same amount of money, no more, no less, so therefore they can run on the issues and not who can grab the most money. But I got a question for Brian, since he doesn't support this. Where does Unshackled New York get their money from?
Go ahead, Brian.
We raise private money. Anybody who wants to contribute to an agenda that reduces spending, reduces taxes, reduces debt, and reduces mandates on the taxpayers of the state of New York and the business community can donate.
But who are your five largest contributors, though?
We have a board of directors that contributes.
All right, but who are they? I mean, I'll give you an example why I asked. There was maybe 5 or 6 years ago, there was a newspaper story and a guest on Bob Smith's show who were talking about the decline of roads and bridges in this area. And the paper picked up on it, did a big thing, 80% of the roads, blah, blah, blah. Well, the group that did the study was funded 100% by road construction companies and heavy equipment manufacturers. So the study was a tad slanted in their interest. I just want to make sure that Unshackled New York is totally objective on this, and somebody isn't pushing to prevent public funding of campaigns.
Nobody on our board or that contributes to our organization tells us that we have to take this position. We look at it simply from the standpoint of, this is not a good use of taxpayer money. When you consider we have $30 billion in roads and bridges that need to be repaired, we have $20+ billion in sewer infrastructure. We spend the most on education, yet we don't get the results that we need. We have a Medicaid system that's one of the richest in the country. It's just not an appropriate use of taxpayer money when we have all these issues. And at the end of the day, you will not eliminate corruption.
Let me follow up Keith's question. Keith asked you where Unshackled gets its funding from. Susan, he could have asked you the same question. Common Cause is supported by who?
Common Cause is supported by a combination of our individual members, foundations which give us grants, and individuals who contribute to our annual dinner. And that list of who contributes to our dinner is up on our website, on our dinner page, and we need to renew the pie chart that talks about our 2013 income stream.
All right. Now, I think there's an important question that my guests may disagree on. And if you're just joining us on this Tuesday afternoon, Brian Sampson's the executive director of Unshackle Upstate. Susan Lerner's the executive director of Common Cause NY. We're talking about campaign finance reform and whether you want to see your tax dollars get into the system that would be designed to take the influence and the big money out. Brian, is there a problem with big money in politics?
Arguably, yeah. I mean, there is. And you know, the question is, does money buy influence?
What do you think?
I think on some level it does. But it buys it on both sides of the issue. You know, we hear all the time we need to get corporate money out of elections. We need to get big money out of elections. What about the unions? Let's look at the public employee unions and how much money they contribute to political campaigns. And we have not seen any proposal brought forth by any group or any organization that would limit that side of the equation as well. You want to say one side can't do it, you have to say the other side. You want to limit corporate contributions, you have to limit public employee union contributions as well. And we simply haven't seen it.
They're treated equally. They're treated in an even-handed way under the system. Direct contributions are significantly limited with a public funding system from any source.
It is very...
And with doing business restrictions like the ones that we have here in New York City, you treat corporations and unions the same way.
And yet, it's much easier for the public employee unions to mobilize their members and get them to send in the $175 checks very quickly, easier than trying to mobilize taxpayers to do it and the business community to do it. And at the end of the day, New York State is a fusion voting state. And through the Working Family Party, the public employee unions and labor unions have an advantage in this state. Doing a 6-to-1 public matching system will greatly enhance their ability to have a more effective voice in Albany. And you can say very clearly that they are already a very influential group of people. You just have to look at the policies of the state of New York.
You know, I've always found this, Evan, to be an amazing argument, where basically the business community says, we just can't convince people to come out and support our policies. There are armies of real estate brokers. There are people who are very strongly connected to the business community. But frankly, I think it's more a choice that they choose to use their dollars rather than to try and actually mobilize people. And where they do try and mobilize, it's very interesting here in New York City. The small landlords have an association, and they tend to mobilize in exactly the same way that Brian is complaining unions mobilize. They tell their members who are legislators who are sympathetic to the kind of legislation which landlords favor, and those people get contributions from small donors who are individual landlords. It can be done, but for various reasons, the business community chooses not to. And to say that there are entities where people trust their unions or trust the associations that they're affiliated with to give them good advice in terms of who to support, that's really the way our system is set up. Individuals get to make their decisions and get to participate. We think it's healthier when they're participating with small-dollar donations that come from individuals, and we think it's healthier when individuals get involved. And there's an interesting fact that political consultants will tell you that your best pool of volunteers probably comes from people who give you small checks. And the easiest place to raise small checks for your campaign are people who are already volunteering for you. That's the emphasis we think we need to see in our elections,
and
emphasis
those...
on actual voters.
All right. I want Brian to respond, and then I've got to get back to the phones. Go ahead, Brian.
Those would be the same political consultants that we are now going to pay with our tax dollars.
You mean in terms of publicly matched?
Absolutely. If you have a publicly matched system, every political consultant that every candidate uses is paid for with taxpayer money. Every robocall that comes to your home in the middle of your dinner that disrupts your family time will be paid for by taxpayer dollars.
Well, some would say that's just the modern campaign, isn't it, Brian?
It's the modern campaign, but it doesn't have to be supported by taxpayers. Everybody has an individual right to invest their money where they choose, Evan. And if I want to donate to a candidate, I should be able to do that. I shouldn't be told by a state government that I have to support a candidate that I fundamentally and philosophically disagree with.
And nobody is suggesting that the system forces you to contribute. The basis of the system is when constituents decide to put their private dollars behind a candidate, then they qualify for public funds, not the other way around. You don't get any grant automatically. It's because you have a base of support. What's also amazing to me is the fact that, you know, opponents of the system keep saying, I don't want my dollars to support something I don't already decide I want to support. Our system of government means that policy decisions are made at a higher level, and your money goes for a lot of things that you may not use yourself. My taxpayer dollars as a resident of New York City is supporting highways up in different parts of the state that I may never drive on. And if you are a registered Republican, your tax dollars are going to print the ballot that Democrats vote on in primaries across the state. But we made a determination that a neutral election is healthier for democracy. And I don't think anybody is suggesting that we should go back to the old system where you have to buy your ballot from the political parties, because that's the way we did it in the early 19th century.
Got to get to the phones. John in Rochester. Go ahead, John.
Great, great program. I just wanted to say, in New York City, Brian brought out the public corruption that happened down there with their existing public financing system, and Susan brought out the point that, well, they caught them, but they, how do you know they caught them? There's probably hundreds of cases that they didn't catch.
Go ahead.
Well, I was going to say that wasn't my primary point, but you say, well, we caught X amount of people. Well, there might have been a lot of people that didn't get caught. They're still under the radar.
Well,
one of the criticisms the New York City system is subject to is the length of time that it takes the Campaign Finance Board to complete its investigations. Because the Campaign Finance Board goes through every single darn piece of paper and every single taxpayer dollar that is spent, and does an extremely thorough audit. The complaint from the campaigns is that takes years, and the campaign is too far in the back, in the past, to be current. But the truth of the matter is they do an extremely thorough job.
In your opinion, Susan, I would disagree with that. But the thing that really kicks me off about campaign financing is we've been hijacked. This state's been hijacked by the public unions. The public unions have boots on the ground that a majority of people in this state don't have. A majority of people in the state go to work 9 to 5. They're not a member of a union. The companies that they work for are small companies with not a lot of resources. And elections are stolen by the boots on the ground. That doesn't come up in campaign financing as far as recording those resources. I'll give you an example. Chris Collins lost the county executive race in Erie County a few years ago because of boots on the ground. Public unions and other unions came up from downstate, and boots on the ground got Chris Collins beat because he didn't have the resources that these public unions have. And this is a big, major flaw in the campaign for public financing.
John, thanks for the call. Go ahead, Susan.
Well, I was going to say that we definitely believe that organized people are the way to go. Whether it's through political parties, whether it's through unions, individuals are persuaded to support or not support somebody. We think that that's a good thing. Organized people should be able to trump organized money.
I have to get you want to weigh in, Brian?
No. I just there's a couple of points here. Susan talks about the campaign finance board in New York City as they caught it, yet everybody complains about the campaign finance board in New York City. So how about we do this? Before we go investing hundreds of millions of taxpayer dollars, let's make sure that we have the enforcement capability. We give local district attorneys the tools that they need to prosecute, because the easiest way to end corruption in the state of New York is, one, hold those that are guilty accountable for what they did and prosecute them to the fullest extent of the law. And number two, us as voters, voting them out of office.
Susan, I want to bring up a couple of important points before we get to a very, very short break here. And that's kind of what John brought up, and I know Unshackle has brought this up with Anthony Weiner. If we have a system in which candidates are deciding that they're going to stick it out in a race and spend tens to hundreds of thousands of dollars just because that money is there, that's not technically a form of corruption based on what the system allows, but that is probably fundamentally corrupt and a good way for taxpayers to lose out. And so I'm curious to know if you think the Anthony Weiners of the world, who know that they've got hundreds of thousands of dollars in matched taxpayer funds, are carrying out these races just because the money is there.
No, actually, what's amusing about this entire discussion is it overlooks the fact that when Anthony Weiner announced that he was running, he immediately became the front runner. So it was later where he made some really ridiculous missteps that he fell out of favor. But when he first began to run, everybody thought he was going to take it in a walk.
I didn't know anybody who did up here. I heard a lot of people say that based on name recognition that he had a plurality of support. I never saw it higher than 20-something percent. Did you?
Well, you know, that put him as the front runner, and he was running the news cycle for weeks and weeks and weeks. There was a great deal of excitement here in the city.
His Twitter feed was
about his running.
But another question, Susan, is the question of races that are sort of non-competitive. If you've got somebody who doesn't have an opponent, that's one thing. If you have somebody who has sort of a sacrificial lamb opponent, they're still going to be able to get a lot of taxpayer dollars in races that are almost never competitive. Is there a concern about that?
Of course, and the various systems set up a scale. Basically, you can't just have a straw man opponent. It has to be an opponent that has some ability to garner support, or else you don't get public money.
We have to take the shortest break in radio. We're going to come right back and talk about what Joe Morelli hinted at in his comment. He talked about Ted O'Brien's race, outside money, money that's hidden from view, hard to know who's sourcing it. How do you get that out of politics? And is public campaign financing the way to do it? We're talking to Susan Lerner, Executive Director of Common Cause New York, Brian Sampson, Executive Director of Unshackle Upstate. I'm Evan Dawson. You're listening to Connections on member-supported public radio. Welcome back to Connections. I'm Evan Dawson and Brian Sampson. If you don't take out corruption in politics through public campaign financing, the question is, how do you do it? Where does Unshackle Upstate see corruption in public in politics in general? And what do you want to see done to get corruption out?
So we're always going to have some form. It's unfortunate, but there will always be some form of corruption in politics, again, because of the human element, because people will always try to find an angle and drive an angle. How do you get that out? Number one, we as voters, we go to the poll, and if we don't like the candidate, we vote them out and we vote in their challenger. But the other part of it is, too, we have to enforce the laws, and we have to enforce them to the fullest extent.
What's not getting enforced?
So as Susan highlighted, it takes a few years sometimes for the Board of Elections to determine that something has happened. In the case of, you know, former Comptroller Liu, it took a while after the election for them to get caught.
New York City Comptroller.
Correct. If we have local district attorneys with the ability to enforce the laws, we should be able to investigate them much more quickly. You also need to increase reporting requirements, which was done in the budget, both from a lobbying perspective and the super PAC perspective. There is more reporting that has to come into play. there are a number of provisions that can be done limiting what a candidate can spend their campaign contributions on is a big step. Those are all the things we should be doing, and we need to do them before we even consider taxpayer finance campaigns.
Susan?
Brian and I are in agreement that what we need to do is not just, well, he's not in agreement with public financing, but there's more. Public financing by itself is not going to be a magic silver bullet. We've been talking about a comprehensive campaign finance package that includes strong enforcement, that includes lowering limits, that includes closing loopholes that allow people to take really large amounts of money. Remember, the Moreland Commission in its report and in several of its hearings started out by saying what's really shocking about Albany is not what's illegal, which is all that the DAs can get to, but what is actually legal, the lack of guidance that allows elected officials to begin to push the envelope, to lose their moral compass because they feel everybody else is doing it. Why can't I get away with it? And what we see are good people who go to Albany, who start out with a clear idea of where the line is, and over time in this culture of entitlement and corruption, they lose their moral compass, they forget where the line is, and they find themselves on the wrong side of the line. So we absolutely need to be tightening up our laws. It's not just a question of enforcement. It's a question of changing the culture. Campaign finance reform makes it clear what is allowable, what is not allowable. And with public matching funds, you begin to change the way in which candidates and electeds think about elections being more about voters.
All right, that was the closest thing we've gotten to agreement so far. So we have fun.
Right, somebody might want to check on that. It could be frozen over.
I do have a couple of comments and questions from Twitter, and you can follow me on Twitter at Evan Dawson. Matt Palmer says, and I'll direct this to Brian, if money does equal speech, does that mean wealthy people speak louder?
No. It doesn't, and I understand the argument there. But again, people have the voice. Can you influence the voice in Albany? Yes, you can. But that doesn't necessarily mean it's the millionaires and the billionaires that do that. Does it happen? Sure. We have a current sitting senator that ran on campaign finance reform. She received about $500,000 in campaign contributions, outside expenditures. She won her race by 18 votes. And she's a strong advocate for campaign finance now that she's a sitting senator. So it can have influence. But again, the ultimate power lies with the voters.
Susan Lerner, if money equals speech, does that mean wealthy people speak louder?
Unfortunately, yes. And the sad impact of their building huge audio speakers, which drowned out the voices of ordinary people, is that fewer and fewer people think it's worth voting, and fewer people think it's worth participating. I've had too many people say to me, you know, it's not really worth it. I don't get my phone calls answered because I can't write a $5,000 check. I can't even write a $100 check. And elected officials only pay attention to people who give them large amounts of money. Now, and that really is, in some ways, the saddest impact of allowing limitless amounts of money to be spent by non-candidate spenders. It discourages people from participating.
Well,
Brian and I are also in agreement, however, that we need much better disclosures. And here in New York City, at Common Cause, we helped a council member write a bill that would require that all communications from independent spenders have to list the top five economic contributors to that effort so that people will know when they get the mail or when they see the TV commercial who is actually speaking to them.
Brian, what do you think about that proposal?
Yeah, it doesn't seem to be a problem.
Doesn't bother you?
No.
Yeah, because I think this brings us to another good question we have from Twitter. JV says that Brian does not seem to want the new changes for campaign finance and public campaigns. Does he feel we should keep campaigns funded exactly as they are now? In other words, do you want to see any changes to the laws and to the system now, Brian?
Clearly. I mean, there are changes. But again, what those changes are, it's more than just saying it's dollars and cents. There have to be laws in place and regulations that say how you spend the money, where you disclose how you got the money, who's maybe spending money on your behalf. So, yeah, changes need to be made because it is a system that is flawed. But again, change the system from that standpoint first. Let's see how it's working, and then we can talk about taxpayer finance campaigns.
Susan, Assembly Majority Leader Joe Morelli talked about the fact that, as an example, in Ted O'Brien's Senate campaign, they didn't know where a lot of the money for the opposition was coming in, and they're frustrated with the fact that it's hard to track it, that they don't know who's influencing it. What are your thoughts about that, and how do you change that?
Well, I think it's a real problem. We call it dark money. And we're seeing it not only in New York races, but we're seeing it across the country at federal races, state and local races. And I think the two things are needed. First, much more robust disclosures. I talked about the top five disclosure bill that we have in the New York City Council. I'd like to see that at the state level. I'd like to see us upgrade our campaign finance disclosure system at the state level, so you can electronically file and reporting is required within 24 hours and the public is able to see. And lastly, I believe that what we need is a constitutional amendment to clarify the situation regarding campaign finance reform, to reverse Citizens United and to bring elections back down to a level where people can participate in every single way, including financially.
And yet, because of Citizens United and because of McCutcheon, decisions that are made at the federal level, you will not see that addressed here in New York. And the candidate that opts into a public matching system does not have the ability to defend him or herself when an independent expenditure is pointed their way.
And actually, we believe it's precisely the opposite, that public funding gives you the best opportunity to protect yourself, because it's unfortunate that when large public money sees large amounts of independent expenditures coming to oppose their candidate, the large donors say, you know, and maybe it's not such a good investment, I'm going to keep my $50,000 check and see what happens down the line. But the grassroots, the small individual donor, the constituent, gets angry. The person who can write a $25 to $50 check looks at the situation and says, why is somebody coming from outside of the state or some other part of the state to tell me who my representative should be? I'm going to write a check. And that's where a matching fund system, which incentivizes private money, gives the publicly backed candidate a leg up.
Let me ask a question based on that system that comes from Twitter. Gary wants to know, with public matching, why is it 6-to-1? Is that based on a formula? It seems arbitrary.
Brian? Completely arbitrary. It started out as a 1-to-1, went to 4-to-1, now it's at 6-to-1. It's completely arbitrary.
Well, it's a system, I'm happy to say, that we have evolved over 3 decades in New York to see what works well and to provide, as I said, a meaningful incentive to private money, to small individual donors, to back candidates. So what we saw with the 1-to-1 match 30 years ago when we started, it was a good beginning. But over time, as campaigns became more expensive, we needed a more robust match. We've gone to the 6-to-1 match, but at the same time, we lowered the amount that was matched. And what's really interesting is that the 4-to-1 match was the first $250. The 6-to-1 match is the first $175. And it was fascinating to me to see the change in the number of $250 versus $175 checks that accompany that switch in the law. Previously, you saw a large number of $250 checks and almost no $175. But as soon as the law shifted, people stopped writing $250 checks. They started writing $175. And what it tells us is that both the candidates and the public are paying attention, and the incentive of small-dollar matching funds is working.
And yet, there's the rub. Where does it stop?
Is it going to 10-to-1, Susan?
It's not something we've been discussing down here in New York City.
Okay, so 6-to-1 looks like the number for now. New York City and the state looking at that number as well. We're going to get back to the phones in just a second. Real briefly, Unshackle has raised the issue of whether this is even constitutional under the state constitution.
Correct.
Brian, why?
1995, the Court of Appeals ruled that public dollars cannot be used for the benefit of a private entity. Political campaigns are private entities. So based on the Court of Appeals ruling, you can safely say that a public matching system in New York State would be unconstitutional and would be challenged.
Susan, is that wrong?
I do believe that's wrong. We've had a public matching system in New York City for over 3 decades, and if that were indeed the restriction of the state constitution, then it certainly would have overturned the city.
Just because New York City's been doing it wrong for 3 decades doesn't mean the rest of the state has to abide.
All right, so you're saying there could
plenty
be a chance.
Plenty of lawsuits around it.
All right, let's get to Joan in Rochester. Joan, thanks for calling Connections. Go ahead.
Yeah, hi. You were talking about disclosure of campaign financing. What if nobody knew? What if we'd laundered all of the names off of the donations? Would that including the politician, would be able to link how much a particular company or a particular individual even received? Wouldn't that
how would you prevent somebody? How would you prevent somebody, Joan, from at least finding a way to send an email to the campaign saying, "Hey, you know that big chunk came from my office."
Yeah, that's, I suppose, true.
But you're saying it would be an interesting thought experiment to see if you could actually prevent politicians from knowing where it came
from.
Yeah,
it would go to some sort of like clearinghouse or something.
Yeah,
and then nobody would really even know. And
I understand the goal behind it. I mean, it might not be doable. Brian, what do you think?
Depends on how much time and effort we want to put into the campaign finance board. You know, but organizations like ours, through our PAC, I mean, we disclose all the dollars we get and where we spend them. So, we follow the laws of the state of New York.
What do you think there, Susan, about what Joan's talking about?
Well, I think it would be extremely difficult to prevent people from letting the candidate or the elected official know one way or the other how much they contributed. I mean, we see this in situations where we have what are called behested donations to charities. And in fact, in California, elected officials are required to disclose if they solicited a donation for a charity that was more than $5,000, with the idea that spending money to get close to a politician is something which the public needs to know.
All right, we're going to wrap up here with some closing thoughts from our group here, our panel. Brian Sampson, Executive Director of Unshackle Upstate. Susan Lerner with Common Cause New York. Susan, we're not seeing statewide campaign financing reform, publicly financed campaigns this year. What do you want to see? Give me 30 seconds. What do you want to see, and how quickly do you think it's realistic?
Well, I think that the session is ongoing, and I think that the issue of campaign finance is still very much in the public's mind in this election year, and I think that we can see a way forward on comprehensive campaign finance reform by the end of the session if the public makes it clear that it needs to be done.
Brian?
This is a David versus Goliath battle. There's a lot of money at play. There's on both sides of it. There's millionaires and billionaires trying to push their agenda. What this comes down to is when you look at the polls, a majority of New Yorkers are opposed to using their taxpayer dollars to fund the political campaigns of current elected officials, challengers to elected officials. They would much rather see that money go to use to improve the infrastructure, improve education, and make life better for New Yorkers.
Haven't we seen Quinnipiac and Siena disagree on this in their polling, Brian?
No, they've been pretty consistent, especially in upstate. When you look at the results, the most recent Q poll back in October was, 52% opposed, and in upstate it's 59% opposed.
Yeah, on the national level, we've seen something in the order of a 4-point margin in favor of 100% federally funded public campaigns, but that's a whole other issue.
It all depends on how you ask the
question. It sort of does, yeah. It kind of comes down to that. Well, we're going to follow what goes on with public financing of campaigns, because I know Susan Lerner for Common Cause New York, it's an ongoing issue for you and your organization. So we'll talk to you again. We appreciate you spending the hour with us today.
My pleasure. Thank you so much for having me.
And Brian, I know that this is an issue that Unshackle Upstate continues to feel passionately about. It's on your radar. We're going to, as it stays in the public eye, we'll talk to you again on this one.
We'll look forward to it. Thanks, Evan.
And thank you for joining the conversation this hour. Short break. When we come back, we're going to take a scientific look at a question. We're not CNN here, and I am bragging a little bit. We haven't mentioned the Malaysian airliner yet. CNN does it all the time. But we do have a scientific question. If they've been getting these pinging sounds, what's the scientific reason that plane is so hard to find? A University of Rochester professor has the answer as we delve into the science next on Connections.